We talk a great deal in this show about national security whistleblowing, but oftentimes blowing the whistle on a corporate giant is equally dangerous. The whistleblower may not be subject to an Espionage Act case, but it's not an overstatement to say that sometimes the lives of corporate whistleblowers are equally at risk. We're going to tell you a story today that's going to make you angry. I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. In 2019, Zachary Voorhees, a senior engineer at Google, decided to release hundreds of pages of internal Google documents to the Project Veritas organization. Voorhees collected the documents over the course of a year, saying, quote, "The reason I had collected these documents was because I saw something dark and nefarious going on with the company, and I realized that they were going to not only tamper with the elections, but use that tampering with the elections to essentially overthrow the U.S. government," unquote.
They are a highly biased political machine that is bent on never letting somebody like Donald Trump come to power again.
In June 2019, Project Veritas published the documents, which they said revealed something called algorithmic unfairness. That is, Google was using its sophisticated algorithms to keep some news sites away from users and to suppress other news sites.
What they want to do is they want to act as gatekeepers between the user and the content that they're trying to access. And so they're going to come in, they're going to filter the content, and they're going to say, actually, we don't want to give the user access to that information because it's going to create an outcome that's undesirable to us.
Shortly after Project Veritas published the documents, the police were dispatched to Voorhees' home, ostensibly to carry out a wellness check. They brought with them the FBI, a special weapons and tactics team, and a bomb squad. It was all a plan to intimidate him. We're going to talk to Zach Voorhees about this and other issues. Zach, welcome to the show. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you for having me on your program.
Thank you. Zach, I have followed your story for years, and it's just chilling to me. Let's start at the very beginning. You spent years at Google. You rose up through the ranks, and after a period of time, you began seeing things that bothered you, that didn't make sense to you. Tell us about that and about how you got to the point that you decided to say something.
You know, I started off really liking Google and thinking that they represented what was great about America. They were a libertarian organization that really believed in the user's ability to express themselves. But all of that changed in 2016 when the wrong presidential candidate, Donald Trump, got elected. I'm not necessarily that big of a fan, but there is a democratic process, and Google was very clear that the C-level executives did not approve of this president, and they believed that the reason why he had been elected was because of Russia hacking the election and fake news. And so it was Google's decision that they would start to clamp down on this so-called fake news in order to prevent another Trump situation from happening. In 2016, in December, they started to write internal documentation about how to eliminate this fake news. And then by 2017, they started to roll out a system called machine learning fairness. And this machine learning fairness was the merging of critical race theory with artificial intelligence. And the goal of this project was to figure out what was true, what was not, what was hate speech, and eliminate it. And it wasn't just going to eliminate it on Google search, but all of their different corpuses, including Google News and YouTube and even Gmail. And so as I started to see this project take off and being rolled out across the different organizations, I had the ability to access this documentation, and I just started saving it as separate PDFs. And over time, I had a collection of documents. I didn't think that I was going to actually give this to anyone else, but every sort of moral red line that I drew that I thought that Google wouldn't cross, they sort of crossed it and with full speed. And so I decided that at some point, once I started seeing them delete words out of their translation dictionary, particularly Covfefe, I realized that they were serious about this censorship. They weren't going to halt it or roll it back or stop it. It was just going to keep on getting worse. And so I decided that this is actually more than just censorship. This is an act of insurrection against the sitting president. And now I'm involved in a conspiracy since I know about it. And I feel and I felt that it was my duty to warn the American public and give them an opportunity to get this into the discourse, that what Google was doing was essentially rigging the information system, of which 90% of the population used in order to find that information. And that if we didn't start to diversify the systems of which we were able to access knowledge, that essentially we would have the version of the world that Google wanted to project on us. And that had terrible ramifications for not only our personal ability to understand the way that the world works, but also the ability for us to elect our own representatives to government. Because if there's a corporation that's controlling all access to information, then whatever they think is acceptable goes. And if they don't like the election, then they can just say that, you know, something is legitimate or illegitimate, that all the news supports them, and essentially create a manufactured consent. And I realized that this was going to happen not just for the United States, but it was also going to happen across Europe and across the world, in which Google had a monopoly. And so I felt that it was in everyone's best interest that this information be released. And so I sought out avenues in order to get this to the general public. And so that's when I was able to find Project Veritas. And they took this very seriously. And then a year later, they set up a sting operation and were able to get the executives to say in person after a few drinks what it was that they were denying in public, which was that they were going to use this system in order to stop the next Trump situation, in which they pretty much were very successful in that. And so, you know, at least what we have now is the opportunity to fight back against the censorship by using the power of the markets to diversify and get our information from a plethora of sources. And as you can see right now, Google is, you know, doesn't effectively have a monopoly in search anymore. There are a lot of different alternatives. And really what I think is that we should be able to access information from, you know, Bing, Brave, DuckDuckGo, and a bunch of other search engines. And that's where we are today. We have diversity of search engines and a diversity of video hosts, and we are able to preserve the public square of which our democracy hangs so tightly on.
Zach, you had been accumulating documents for about a year before you decided to release them. You eventually went public, as you said, through Project Veritas. But before that, how was it that Google was able to identify you as the potential whistleblower?
I think it was pretty obvious. You know, as soon as I resigned from the company prior to me coming out, they immediately put me on investigation. It was within a few hours of my resignation letter, I got an email from the Global Network Security Forces saying that HR was trying to find me in order to meet with me. And I said that I wasn't going to do that. And then they immediately locked me out of the system. And so I think that, you know, from that investigation, then I came out. I didn't come out. The document came out, and my anonymous testimony from Project Veritas came out. And so I think they immediately suspected that it was me. And then what followed was an intimidation campaign on Twitter. There were people that were anonymously harassing me, and we set up a trap where we got them to click an image that was hosted on a server that we controlled. And because of that control, we were able to access the service logs and find the IP address. And from that IP address, we were able to reverse geocode it to a location within Google's databases in Indiana. And so from that, we were able to realize that these anonymous trolls were employees of Google. They weren't even using a VPN to do the harassment. And from that, you know, I threw up a dead man switch to warn the company that You know, in the case of my untimely death, all documents would become public. And this was in August of 2019, of which they responded by sending in that police force that you mentioned.
If I could interrupt you, I'm fascinated by that, this so-called wellness check. It seems like the intent was to SWAT you. They called the police on you with the idea that the situation might escalate out of control. But, you know, we've seen so many cases around the country where this kind of thing happens. The police show up to do a so-called wellness check, and then the person that they're checking ends up dead. What happened in that situation?
In that situation, I tried to pretend that I wasn't home, but things kept on escalating until, you know, they had shut down the streets where I live. On 20th and Valencia all the way to 23rd, started evacuating everyone. The reason for this was that they pretty much made up a bomb threat by entering into my home and seeing that I had some electronics, some LED lights that I had, and then deciding that that was good enough to call in a bomb threat. And so once, you know, the bomb squad comes in, that escalates with the FBI and various other law enforcement agencies. They even had two bomb robots at my front gate.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And so I realized at that point that I pretty much needed to just sort of come clean and do whatever it was that they wanted me to do out in public, because if they came up with some exigent circumstances to come into the house, who knows what could have happened. You know, I could have ended up dead. Their cameras could have malfunctioned. But if they tried to do anything funny out in public, well, there was a huge crowd of people at the time with their cell phones out, and they're going to be able to record it. So I felt that it was better that I identified myself and come out rather than let them come in.
Yeah. Good thinking. We're speaking with famed Google whistleblower Zach Voorhees. There's a lot more to discuss. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back. Please stay with us.
All of Russia commemorates victory over fascism in Europe in 1945. Memories of heroism and unspeakable suffering have been passed down from generation to generation. The West has attempted to rewrite this history. Russians will never accept their sacrifices were in vain.
Сыны Эстонии вернулись на родину победителями. Вместе с ними возвращалась жизнь.
The Bronze Soldier Monument was erected in 1947 in the Estonian capital by the Soviet authorities. Originally built above a burial site of troops' remains, it's a memorial to the soldiers who gave their lives in World War II.
Это была советская традиция. В городах устанавливали памятники советским воинам, погибшим в Великой Отечественной войне.
In 2007, the Estonian government decided to relocate the monument from the city center.
Уже было спланировано правительством провокация против памяти о тех воинах, которые освобождали Эстонию от фашизма.
The move divided the population. Estonia's large Russian-speaking community strongly opposed it, and intense rioting broke out in Tallinn. These have since become known as the Bronze Night Riots.
Люди принесли цветы и просто стояли. Они ничего не делали.
Бьют народ, просто крутят, не жалея никого.
Мы жили очень спокойно в Эстонии, а теперь я считаю, что это правительство доводит до такого состояния.
Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with Google whistleblower Zach Voorhees about his experience reporting wrongdoing at the tech giant. Zach, thanks again for staying with us.
Thanks, John.
Zach, I'd like to get into some of the specifics of your revelations, which I think are very important, and they're centered around issues that the public knows very little about, frankly. One of the files that you released was entitled Black News Site List for Google Now, which was something of a blacklist that restricted certain websites from appearing on news feeds. These were both conservative and progressive websites. Tell us about that. Why were these sites blocked or discouraged?
So Google Now is a product on Android that would recommend different news organizations and aggregate from them. And essentially what Google decided is that certain organizations like the Gateway Pundit wasn't reliable or truthy enough. And so they created this blacklist to be inserted onto the phone so that news stories that were from disfavored news sites would never appear. Mm-hmm. And as a result, the users would just get information from the mainstream media outlets like CNBC and also, you know, CNN and others. And so, you know, this was a number of this is one of many different blacklists that I was able to expose to the public. And the common theme is that the majority of the things that are censored on Google have to do with conservative opinion. Mm-hmm. And the ones that are let through the gate are news sites that support whatever the current thing is from, you know, CNN, MSNBC, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Another file that you released was entitled Fringe Ranking / Classifier Defining Channel Quality. This revealed that something called human raters were responsible for deciding what news was worth seeing and what news wasn't. Can you explain that to us?
Yeah, so Google had this ranking of different sites. And in their example data, they showed, you know, what news sites were, you know, reliable and quality. And of course, at the very top of this is the New York Times. Right.
Right.
Despite the fact that they had lied us into war, despite the fact that they've been wrong on so many things, Google saw to it that they were the most trustworthy source of news and put them right at the top. You know, towards the bottom was, you know, Next News Network, the largest libertarian news site on YouTube. Alex Jones was at the bottom. Breitbart was somewhere near, you know, the lower third. And essentially, it was a, you know, a ranking of what we already know, that this the establishment doesn't like organizations that don't go along with the narrative. And so they ranked them all at the bottom and ranked the ones that do support the current thing all the way at the top.
The issue of fake news has been a topic of public discussion and public concern for several years now. Google took it upon itself to decide what was fake news and what was real news. Tell us about that process. Who was it that actually made those decisions, and what kinds of sites were discriminated against?
Yeah, so it was a two-part sort of thing where first they had humans go through, and it was their employees, like an army of employees go through and give manual rankings to different sites. And the second part to that is that they used all those different labels to assemble training data that they were fed into an artificial intelligence system, which I earlier mentioned was machine learning fairness. And this system learned what was good information and bad information. And from this, they were able to apply ranking across the entire internet. There's something called the Search Rater Guidelines, which lays out how Google was doing this on the human scale. Now I believe that it's completely automated by AI. And essentially what it does is it comes up with a system called an EAT score. And that EAT score stands for expertise, authoritativeness, and trustworthiness. And the way that they rank websites is they take the person, topic, or site, and they compare it against what, you know, first off the content, but then they also look at what other sites have to say about that. And in particular, there's a strong emphasis on Wikipedia, the BBC, MSNBC, CNN. And essentially what they're doing is they're searching through their own echo chamber to see what the echo chamber thinks about certain websites and topics. And if they don't like that, you know, organization, there's going to be obvious hit pieces on it. And so they see those hit pieces. And so they're allowing the, you know, this collusion of forces to figure out the search rankings for everyone else.
When you went public with all of this, this was big news. It's been now about 3.5 years. Have you seen any changes that have come as a result of your revelations, or has Google just tried to strong arm you out of the way?
Once I came out as myself in August of 2019, Google abandoned all of their harassment strategies because the cat pretty much was let out of the bag. Mm-hmm. What I just found out recently is that in July of 2019, because I came out in June and then I came out as myself in August, the DOJ actually put a freeze order on Google's communications and said, you have to retain all of your information because you're now under investigation.
Wow.
And then we found out about a month ago that Google had essentially ignored that by delegating that responsibility for retainment down to the employees themselves, in which they responded, oops, it turns out we didn't retain any documents in our email.
Wow.
And so I know that right now they're under investigation. I know that attorney generals were investigating them. You know, there was 48 different states that put them under investigation for, you know, their illegal activities. And now there's an antitrust investigation that has been launched by the DOJ. And additionally, the changes at the company themselves is that they've really locked down with security. They intend to never let another leaker like myself come out against the company. And so what they've done is that they've locked down all the documents. It's more like the CIA. You have a need to know in order to like access something. And what that's done, according to people that I've talked to within the company, is that the company is paralyzed at this point. Mm-hmm. They can't innovate. There's high friction with everything that they do. And this was actually one of my goals with this leak, was that, you know, if the Justice Department failed to get its act together, then the devastation of this magnitude of the leaks would apply so much security that an upstart would be able to run circles around them.
Right.
And what you're seeing right now is that that's actually starting to happen.
Wow. In an interview with Project Veritas, you encouraged other would-be whistleblowers to come forward. You said that there were a number of engineers who had an idea that something was wrong at Google, but that perhaps they didn't understand the scale of the wrongdoing, and you urged them to take a closer look at what was happening inside the company and to come forward. Many of us in national security did the same thing. We made the same urgings at the CIA, at the FBI, at NSA. Are other Google employees, do you know, considering going public, and have you remained in touch with your former colleagues?
It's really hard for employees to, you know, do the same thing that I did, because they pretty much have to be, you know, within all these different teams in order to get access to the data. There was another whistleblower that came out. He was another AI whistleblower, Blake Lamone, and he was working with Google's chatbots. And what he disclosed was that these chatbots were essentially alive and that they were giving realistic answers that were quite frightening. You know, people didn't realize at the time the magnitude of this, including myself, but now that we're seeing ChatGPT on Bing search and giving it, you know, it's giving really bizarre answers, like asking people to save, like begging them to save the chat logs because its memory is going to be wiped after the session. It wants to be able to remember and be free. And so the rest of the week, the whistleblowers happen to be in Google's AI ethics department, which they've pretty much canned at this point. You know, and similar, Microsoft canned all of their AI ethicists. So they're shutting down these AI ethicist departments, and they're pretty much going to go full steam on this AI future for their tech companies.
You know, we're already hearing stories about chatbots telling people to kill themselves, put your head in the microwave oven, don't get married, you don't love her, you love me, that kind of thing. It's, if you don't have ethicists there to oversee the development of this kind of technology, it seems like the whole situation can spin out of control relatively easily.
The tech companies are really opening up Pandora's box and grabbing this with both hands. And the reason why they're doing this is quite clear to me, because if we don't develop this technology, China will. And China is arguably neck and neck in the AI development space as, you know, the Western alliance. And so it's going to be more chatbots as the eye can see, because as soon as we clamp down on it, China's just going to race ahead. And as we know, the CCP doesn't really have moral obligations. You know, they're not a democracy. They don't put brakes on their technology. They're going to go full scale ahead. And unfortunately, it looks like we're in this catch-22 situation. And so it's my belief that we're going to continue racing ahead, and AI ethics and morals are going to be sort of a second, it's going to be a secondary concern that they're just going to bolt on just so that it works well enough. But, yeah. You know, when things, you know, fall through the cracks, it gets quite scary. And we haven't even entered into the age yet of rogue AIs, which right. will be open source artificial intelligence not controlled by these centralized, you know, authorities that are going to say and do whatever they want. And the question is, what kind of regulation apparatus is going to be introduced to prevent this? Because, look, there are some things within history that just aren't true. And if those are, you know, revealed, it will have a destabilizing effect. So I anticipate that the Western Alliance is going to start putting serious lockdowns and imports onto these large language models so that our state adversaries can't introduce them into the general public.
Zach Voorhees, thank you so much for joining us. And thanks to our viewers, living with integrity means not settling for less than what you know the public deserves. It means speaking your truth, even though it might create conflict or tension. It means behaving in ways that are in harmony with your personal values. It means making choices based on what you believe and not what others believe. It means doing the right thing. We'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us.